2024 is the fucking year of sand. It is the year of sand. We're all about it.
Oh, I knew we were going to get to this, but right away?
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. It's the year of sand. Look, Dune just happened. Dune is blowing up. It's big. We love Dune. We love this. We love our Arrakis, our Dune.
But Sandman came out last year.
My good friend Dennis made a great film.
Yeah, and I still see people talking about it in various ways. There's that one guy who just every day posts round 12 IMAX or whatever, just going to see it over and over again. I think he's just trying to get into the Dune Messiah premiere.
Yeah,
which you know what, I respect that. Mm. But also the score for that movie, though, man, I actually really liked it. Whichever 16-year-old Hans Zimmer paid on Fiverr to do it is like really good. But we had Dune. Dune just came out. Later this year, Furiosa, another sand movie. That's the post-apocalyptic desert. And we got two Sandland things. We got Sandland animation and Sandland game, both coming out.
Pretty good.
So I don't know if there's any that I missed, but we're definitely here on
Year of Sand. You should have saved the Sandcastle episode for this year.
Yeah. Maybe we'll dig a sand hole. We'll go to the beach and we'll dig a big hole.
Some kid just got killed by a sand hole collapsing on her.
Okay, well, we're not going to do that.
I think we should.
Which one of us should be the sacrifice for the sand hole? Or do you think you're going to leave it up to chance?
I think it would have to be up to chance.
One of us dies in the sand hole is the episode.
The weakest link.
The sand hole will decide which one of us deserves to go on.
The only way I can pick up.
All right.
Decide your fate.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Please Don't Listen to This, Your Life Depends on It, the show where we do something different every single week. And this week, we're on a quest for water in Akira Toriyama's Sand Land. But who do I have here with me today? I have the meanest, nastiest demons of the desert. I have Thief Alex.
Hello, I dress like Santa for fun.
I have Beelzebub, Seb.
I'm the Prince of Demons. There's no one stronger than me.
You're absorbing the powers of the night.
I'm absorbing the power of the night.
I love that scene so much. It's very much like a kid making up something that's not real kind of energy.
Congrats on landing that dub role, Seb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you're doing great work.
Really stealing it right out from under Sean Schemmel, who was gunning for it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He was going to make him sound like this.
I think that's a little too deep.
I think
he's definitely like a bratty kid.
You can make him sound like Vegeta just pitched up.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
You sound like Bowser Jr. And I'm your host, Dabra.
Someday,
Nick.
When I'm older. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
I'm going to get that barn.
Originally... this is my episode, and originally I was going to have it be about Orson Welles' F for Fake, which will still probably be an episode at some point. I have a lot to say about that.
In a month.
Maybe in a month. Maybe later. Maybe I'll decide. I've been deciding on a whim what my episodes are a lot more instead of planning them out in advance. Mm. Like, I'll have an idea for what the episode is, and then the week of, I'll be like, actually, I think I want to do this instead. Mm-hmm. But while we were recording our episode on the menu, the news broke of Toriyama's passing. And everyone on Twitter is sharing all these like drawings and designs of his, all this stuff from all the games he contributed to, tons of stuff from Dragon Ball and Z and Dr. Slump, which we will definitely be talking about. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? It's been like 15 years since I read Sandland. or something like that. It hasn't actually been that long because it definitely didn't get published in English right when it came out in Japan.
Yeah.
Because it came out in Japan in like 2006 or something. Stone Ocean was still in Jump. It was Stone Ocean, Hunter x Hunter, Prince of Tennis.
Big.
Yeah. So it was of an era.
What a
right?
spread.
Yeah. And Jump was kind of Shonen Jump, the magazine with all that's serializing all this stuff, was kind of struggling to find its new big thing after Dragon Ball because One Piece hadn't exploded yet. It was good and big. It was in no danger of being canceled, but it hadn't like, you know, turned into a huge phenomenon yet.
I think it hadn't stretched out.
Yes, it had not.
Bleach wasn't out yet, was it?
I think it might have just started.
Okay.
I don't think it was. Yeah. Ichigo. And Naruto was like next year.
Bankai.
So all of this stuff is happening, and Akira Toriyama is like, oh, you know what? Let me do a little thing. Let me do like a small thing, and I really respect that because you don't need more money after Dr. Slump and Dragon Ball. You don't need more money.
It's true.
But to be able to just be like, what if I just did something small? What if I did something that didn't have to go on forever? That I could end whenever I wanted. And get this, I'll set it in a desert. I don't have to draw trees. Yeah. I don't have to draw the background most of the time.
What I thought was very cute was there was a note at the beginning of this collected volume that said, I just wanted to do something small and draw some tanks. And then I found out that tanks are hard to draw, but I had already started it and plotted the whole thing. So then I just suffered.
Yeah, I love that. I really love Toriyama's author notes, but...
he's adorable. He was adorable.
So at some point I read Sandland and I liked it, but I didn't hold it in my mind for very long until I started playing Dragon Quest games where I would see like, oh my God, this is what Toriyama was doing. Like every year he was fucking putting out, these Dragon Quest designs. They would say, hey, can you design a vaguely evil looking guy? And he's like, yeah, sure. Here you go. Hey, can you design a guy who will, you know, be the leader of a shop of a town? Can you design a very effeminate, obviously gay jester who is also a knight? And Toriyama's like, I got you. And all these characters that are that feel special. But when I'm playing through Dragon Quest, especially 11, I kept thinking about Sandland because I'm like, this is. You know,
there's tanks in a desert.
Well, no, not necessarily, but I meant like when given kind of free reign, when you give him like a prompt that's like three words long, like, hey, can you give me a demon? What does a demon look like? And sometimes it'll be like
shockingly consistent,
the exact thing you expect. And but when it's like, okay, what does a water stealing machine look like? That sort of thing just feels so inventive and bulbous, and I love the way it's just like a big floating pod.
Portholes.
Yeah. And so when I'm playing Dragon Quest XI, I keep thinking back to Sandland, and that's where I see the most influence on the designs, as opposed to something like Dragon Ball or Chrono Trigger, where I definitely see Toriyama's art style all over it, but I wasn't like making the comparison in my head. And then... I started thinking about it again more because after his death, people were going around posting a lot of his like little cut-ins, little notes in front of the manga chapters. All the great ones, and the especially good ones are in front of Dr. Slump because he's always saying like, I am like Dr. Slump. I don't want to draw anything. I don't want to make anything. I thank you for buying my manga so I can spend my time doing what I actually want, which is slacking off and riding my motorcycle. And we love slackers here on the show. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of respect for people who slack off. And there's the note that Seb just brought up from the beginning of Sandland where he talks about, he's like, I fucking hated drawing the tank every time. I can't believe that I made a whole story about guys riding around in a tank. Because the tank has moving parts, and it's complicated every time. And
sometimes you have to draw multiple tanks.
Yeah, and I was like, you know what? This would be perfect. Because Alex and I are intimately familiar with Dragon Ball. And Alex, you just went through Dr. Slump, the anime, relatively recently, right?
Yeah, I never finished it, but it was a casual evening watch for me for a little bit.
I read most of it in the library when I was a kid, but I don't think I ever finished it because they didn't have all the volumes.
Yeah.
I think I would do it now, but it's you can't just say read all of Dr. Slump. That's not something you can just say to someone.
And I watched the 80s anime series. I think it was 80s series. Yeah. They had a 90s series that I didn't bother with.
Really? Did they just redo it?
Because it looked worse. I think it was a new adaptation.
Wow, that's weird.
I don't know if this has changed in the couple of years since I watched it, weirdly, like, not all of it was even fan subbed. Like,
wow.
It's not an obscure series.
It's not.
But I was really surprised at that. Like, it was one of those things that seemed like it did fall through the cracks, weirdly.
I'm pretty sure all of the manga got, like, an official Viz translation. Yeah,
I was just like, oh, the fan subs are only up to, like, halfway through the show. I'm like, I wasn't sure if it was actively being worked on or if all of it wasn't, like, being seeded or didn't have an active torrent, but I was, like, shocked at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, whatever fan sub groups had maybe subbed the whole thing, or just gone.
Shit Eater was the name of the fan sub, because, of course, it's
Toriyama would be so proud. Yeah. He would absolutely fucking love that.
Yeah. That show was really fun, and it's, incredibly charming and whimsical and weird. I'm a huge fan of the Dragon Ball crossover episode that they did.
Really good.
Doesn't make any sense.
Goku visits Penguin Village and then he goes there. It's like right in the middle of the Red Ribbon Army arc. And the bad guy shows up too. It's General Blue, I think.
Yeah.
And Supaman, the Sour Plums man, tries to fight him, but nobody is impressed. I was like, okay, well, I could do a Dragon Ball ish episode, or I could do a Dragon Quest something, but I'm saving that. Or I could do Dr. Slump, but I'm like, let's do something small and compact that I still have a lot of affection for. Let's go with Sandland. And for this first segment, I just really wanted to dig into some of our favorite Toriyama designs, because people complain about Toriyama's writing all the time, but he didn't really want to do that. He wanted to draw cool stuff. And he drew some of the coolest stuff ever. People are still putting it on fucking, murals on the sides of taco shops.
Yeah.
And fucking their binder for school or whatever. People are putting those Toriyama designs everywhere.
Flagrant disregard for copyright.
Absolutely.
In the best way.
Uh-huh. You have seen an ethnic Goku somewhere. Mm-hmm. Goku has been every nationality.
Goku is black long before Goku Black.
Yes, exactly, absolutely. Dragon Ball and Dr. Slump, to a lesser extent, have also just influenced so many of the things that we take for granted. We went on a gigantic, gigantic Sonic tangent during our Sonic OVA episode, which now I don't even think that was last year. That was like 2 years ago, but I still think about that one all the time.
Basement.
Yep, at the Lizard Lounge.
Yeah, wow. It was like 2 years ago.
But Seb, what was your feeling when you first saw Super Sonic? Like, when was the first time? Did you play Adventure 2 first?
No, I played Sonic Heroes first.
Oh wow.
I think I mentioned this on the Shadow of the Hedgehog episode. But we didn't have Sega games growing up. Like, we didn't have any Sega consoles. So we weren't, like, in the Sonic ecosystem until my brother's friend was playing Sonic Heroes. And he was like, I want to play that. And then he got it. And then we played it. And then we went backwards.
So when you went through all that fucking effort to get all the stupid Chaos Emeralds and beat it with four teams and then Sonic goes super at the end, or did you not do that?
Oh, we did that.
Okay.
Yeah, so
do you have like a fucking moment where you're like, holy shit, this is the coolest thing?
I don't remember, honestly. This was probably in 2004 or 5. Mm-hmm. I think
so. Had you just absorbed Super Saiyan by cultural osmosis since then? You're like,
I was just like, oh, that's normal. Like, he just gets. He gets superpowers.
Everyone does this.
Yeah, this shows you how ubiquitous it was.
Like, I think because I didn't make the connection until much later that was like pretty directly a reference to going Super Saiyan, because he goes yellow and then he like gets like energy lines around him. He flies.
Yeah.
He
and his hair goes up. His hair goes
up. Like it's a pretty direct reference. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really read it that way until much later because I wasn't as into Dragon Ball, despite having seen, you know, a good amount of it just because it was on Toonami, just like everybody else our age. It was just normal for things to power up, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's Power Rangers, there's Sailor Moon.
Power Stone.
You know, Power Stone. Power I totally great. Knew about that when I was 10 years old. I don't have like a big history with like following Dragon Ball. I've got a newer appreciation for it as I've gotten older. But when I was younger, it was really just Dragon Ball Z is the counterpart to Sailor Moon. They were both on Toonami.
It's very funny because I think that's only for us, right? Only for Americans. Are those two things even related to each other just because they happen to come over around the same time?
Well, they were created around the same time, too.
That's
got to
be like regular Dragon Ball, right? Not Z. I guess.
But I think now when I think about Akira Toriyama as a creator, I liken him a little bit more to Rumiko Takahashi in terms of his influence and his prolificness. Because Sailor Moon, like, what else did she fucking do? Like,
what else did Sailor Moon do? What else did Rumiko Takahashi do?
No, like not Rumiko. Oh, okay. I can't even remember the Sailor Moon's creator's name, but that's just me being dumb. Like, she did a manga before that called Sailor V, which was basically like a prototype and the backstory of Sailor Venus, actually. But I can't even think of anything else she's done.
Naoko Takeuchi.
Yeah. So Takeuchi, I don't know what she's been doing since then. But I think Akira Toriyama, I appreciate him a lot. I think his art is very charming. His designs are always, you know, they can be very cute and they can be very cool and they can be very over the top. And I appreciate in his writing, everybody's just friends. Like, you've got a bad guy, but then he's your friend.
Yeah.
All the time.
What if he's not such a bad guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Almost every bad guy becomes like if they're not the big, big bad, they become your friend. And that happens in Sandland. And that happens. So I did some extra credit for this episode. Wow. I got done with Sandland. I was like, oh, here's a list of recommendations on the shady manga reading site.
Oh, that's great. That's how you know it's fucking good.
I want to hear everyone's shady manga reading site. When we get to the main segment,
to inform you I read it officially.
I mean, I read the Shonen Jump translation, but I wasn't reading it officially.
Yeah. We'll save it for the main segment, but I want to hear the shitty name.
Yeah, so at the end of the page, it was like, here's some more stuff that you could read. And I was like, oh, more Akira Toriyama stuff? I'll take a look. And then there was Jocko the Galactic Patrolman, and I was like, what is this? So I click on it, and it's only 10 chapters, and I said, oh, I guess I'll try this out. And I had never heard of it before. Apparently, it's a little prequel to Dragon Ball, and there's a little annoying space patrolman who looks like a tiny version of Ultraman.
Yeah. So great. I love his fucking design. And we're going to be gushing about, this whole segment, we're going to be gushing about different Toriyama character designs, but like,
a very visual segment. Yes. Look it up anytime we mention the character.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he crash lands on Earth. He was supposed to be watching for a ship that was carrying an alien that was going to destroy all the Earthlings.
Yeah.
But he just fucked up too bad. So they spend the whole time. He meets like an old man living on the island he crash landed on. And they go through this whole thing trying to repair his ship. They meet a girl named Tights, who you can probably tell who she's related to.
Yep.
They go through this whole thing. They like save the world or whatever from they save the city from the rocket falling into the sky because Tights was supposed to be a body double for an idol that was supposed to go up into space, and the rocket failed. So they saved that. Become heroes. They fix the ship. Jocko misses the pod landing on Earth. But they give he gives the anti-gravity technology from his ship to Tights' dad, Dr. Briefs. And so Capsule Corpse ends up making their flying cars and shit.
And that's why all the cities look like that in Dragon Ball, where they have fucking big giant houses on sticks and hover cars and stuff like that.
Yep.
Which, I mean,
cool.
So much of Toriyama's art with the cover pages in Dragon Ball or the splash pages and stuff like that, where he's like, oh, I just want to draw a cool bike or something like that. He draws Goku in a motorcycle jacket and it's a hover bike, or it's this weird arc that goes from the back wheel to the front wheel. It's a cover on the motorcycle, something like that. Love those designs.
Wrap around windshield.
Yes, they'll wrap around windshield. Those vehicles are so
very
specific.
Bubbly technology.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was a cute little thing, and I enjoyed it. Apparently this was the last thing that he wrote and illustrated by himself.
Hmm.
Came out in 2015. He would have been probably in his late 50s at the time. And, you know, that's reasonable. Around then, you know, mm-hmm. you start running out of steam to, draw that much, mm-hmm. as much as you were doing. It was really cute, and I enjoyed it. So I think I want to go on. I did try to read Dragon Ball once.
I can't recommend it enough.
I got a few chapters in, and it's not that I didn't like it. It mm-hmm. was probably I just got distracted.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I want to try to read it again. At least the original run up to Z, which in the manga,
time skip
in the manga, it is just Dragon
yep,
Ball.
Yep, Z is an invention of the Americans. Yeah. I know.
It's not Zed.
But
get out of here, you.
But we lost a good one this past week.
Yeah.
So it's a shame. I'm glad we took the time to go in and read some of his stuff.
Yeah. Alex, give me some of your favorite Toriyama designs, or give me a history. Right. When do you remember being aware of his stuff?
I Dragon Ball was a weird, shameful blind spot for me for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get into it until, maybe 5 or so years ago when I actually sat down and watched, the original run of Dragon Ball.
So good.
And I still have not watched all of the filler for Dragon Ball Z, but I watched the recut.
Mm-hmm. Watch Kai?
Yeah,
Kai's good. People complain about Kai because it's not what was on when they were children, much better.
And 100 less episodes. Yes. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna watch that.
So can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you guys seen this discourse over people finding or creating color corrected versions? Or they got the masters or something
mm-hmm.
for both Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. And the way that everybody views them in their heads is in Dragon Ball, the sky is green. There's just this color shift. And the same in Sailor Moon, where everything has this pink overlay.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just a product of the scans
mm-hmm.
or the age of, the tapes that they were running
yeah.
from. And everyone had this discourse about no, don't fix them because this is the way I remember them.
I sort of get where I'm a generally anti-nostalgia kind of guy, but mm-hmm. I kind of have no dog in this fight because I was a manga reader.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, my first thought of these characters is mostly the clean lines of the manga. And when I would see it in the animated version, I would often get a little disappointed because the art isn't nearly as sharp. Right,
yeah. There's definitely more character to it, and it's not the fault of the animators. They have to simplify
of course not.
A bit.
It's different. It's totally different. But to go this is the way it looked when I was a kid. You're messing up my memory. It's they're not. This is just a new way to look at it. You should be kind of excited to see it this way. You know?
Yeah, and it was. excuse me. It was an interesting experience watching through a lot of stuff that I had gotten through. Being into anime and being connected with the
I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
No, not really.
Okay,
that's fine.
What did you think of the fucking those eye catches on original Dragon Ball? Huh?
Yeah,
that was the best.
Good stuff. And they changed it out at each third point in the series, which mm-hmm. is good because I didn't expect them to change it at all, and
dun,
I'm
dun,
whoa.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. And I did all, when I watched through all that stuff, I watched the dubbed version, which is the nostalgia pick,
uh-huh.
definitely. But I grew to really like it, especially the original
Dragon Ball's like series from the 80s is like undeniable. It mm-hmm. quickly became like a top five shonen series for me because it was like a lot of what I knew about Dragon Ball was the Z stuff, and it was a lot of the kind of the things that the like dumb shonen trope stuff was mm-hmm. most of my exposure to what Dragon Ball was.
Yeah.
So getting that, like, and there are like tournaments and fights in original Dragon Ball, but it's mm-hmm. not the focus of the story, really.
Right.
And it was a lot more lighthearted and weirder and funnier than I expected.
Really important plot beats happen because they will be funny in Dragon yeah. Ball.
And the first time they use the Dragon Balls is a joke.
Yes.
The original cast definitely has a really big soft spot for me. I'm a big Yamcha head.
Oh, man.
Just behind me, I have a figure of him. But I love his old, his like original design.
With the sword?
With the sword and the like green gi and the big, long, flowing hair.
Mm-hmm.
It rules. I think that they did him dirty in like his post time skip, like short hair and just wearing the fucking
the turtle gi,
the regular outfit. Mm. Yeah. But, and then all the weird, like, inconsequential side characters in Dragon Ball are so funny. Like, mm-hmm. Roshi just has a turtle whose name is Turtle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, cool. You never hear about that guy.
No, he's not like, you know, like, fucking Yajirobe and Korin.
Yajirobe rules.
And Tenshinhan and Chiaotzu are all like very important when they show up for the first time.
Yeah.
Turtle's just Turtle. He's just there. He's that's how he is. He talks.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm a big fan of as far as like memorable, weird Toriyama designs that I really loved.
Uh-huh.
Android 8 is just Frankenstein he rules.
He's like a doughy Frankenstein. Like he's got very soft features.
It felt like something that he drew that he just wanted to put in the book. Mm-hmm. Like I understand it's like, oh, it's a humanoid like android. Oh, mm-hmm. I can make him look like Frankenstein.
Yes.
But to me, that was one of the designs that felt like, oh, I just thought of this. This would be fun to draw. I'm gonna put this in my book.
Yeah. A lot of his stuff feels like that. Like as I was reading a couple of these, like or Sandland and Jocko. You would just find little things he drew in the corners, like just in the backgrounds. Like mm-hmm. he was having fun with this. He got bored of something. He's like, here's a spider.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I noticed like later on in the book, there's like the same fucking spider, mm-hmm. like on a different wall. I'm like, that guy's moving places. Yeah. It's a little spider. He's all
and
over
then
the place.
We mentioned Dr. Slump. And I think that is like a treasure trove of this kind of weird, bizarre, I drew a funny guy for a punchline kind of art. But I'm a big fan of RLA. Her design is so good.
All right.
And Gachan is really cool too. The like weird winged baby.
In one of the later Budokai Tenkaichi games, I want to say it's Budokai Tenkaichi 3, where they really threw everyone in.
Yeah.
Arale is playable.
That rules.
And she can stagger the toughest, biggest character. So like the fucking Uzaru, the giant ape. It absorbs any attack except if Arale punches them.
Yeah.
In which case they double over in pain. It's so funny. Great gag throw in. Because like who cares? Like that's fun. It's really good.
It's good. I have like my Toriyama fandom is kind of that like early period stuff, which I'm like I love the amount of creativity there. And I think that like I was glad to have experienced this, which we'll get into in the main segment, because I had my like the narrative that I had always heard was that he kind of lost some of the spark as Dragon Ball went on, dragged on and became the thing that he was shackled to.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely now realize that that's not fully true. But
no, I think that it's just that it was always his favorite thing, I think, was character design. And he liked to design the characters. And then he would get a little frustrated moving them around.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, I'm sure he says this in some interviews. Form changing stuff comes from editors saying, well, this guy can transform, can he? Like this dickhole, right? Like,
a final form.
Yeah, yeah. Can't you make him into a new toy to sell or a new thing to put on the cover?
Frieza needs to look like the alien. He needs to look like the Xenomorph for one episode.
No, I think that's a Toriyama original, because back in original Dragon Ball, when he had to draw a pirate robot, it has the big long fucking Xenomorph head too.
Yeah, I do like that one.
But I think so much of these characters transforming, getting new forms is because, like, what if I got to do a new character design, right? Yeah. What if I got to draw a new character without introducing a new character? And then, like, we were talking about a little bit about the Super Saiyan Spikes earlier. The famous story about that, he's like, I got sick of inking Goku's hair black in every scene. Like, what if the power-up was, like, a way for his hair to be light, so I didn't have to do that every time.
I was a poor mangaka, and I couldn't afford any more ink.
A couple more random thoughts before we move on. I'm a big fan of the tails. He loves to do the tails.
Oh, like, yes.
Thinking Dragon Ball and the one of the characters in this manga that we're going to talk about also has a tail very prominently, and I'm like, yeah. It rules. I love that. It's such a good feature for a weird, like, little kid to have a tail that's, like, as long as he is. and then I'm a big Trunks fan, generally. Oh, I think both his kid and adult versions are really good.
I really like how Akira Toriyama always had kid. Like, he has a full range of ages for his characters. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got little old guys, and they tend to, like...
They tend to hunch over, and they've got, like, the...
Yeah, but they're not just, like... the old guy who sits there and gives you wisdom or something like that. They're like actually a part of things, like Thief in Sandland, or Oromi in Jocko, or you'll have kids all the time who are protagonists.
Yeah. And you know, he's got his teenagers and his adults as well. Yeah. And it's like kind of going the full age range. And when I've always liked the way his fucking in the Dragon Quest games, where there are some Dragon Quest games where you don't get a named character, you get classes, right? So Dragon Quest 3 and 9 and some of the other ones are like that, where it's like, okay, this depiction drawn by Toriyama is what that class is.
This is Wizard.
Yeah, this is Wizard. And in Dragon Quest 3 in particular, he drew a gendered version for each, right? And some of them are like so fucking like, your brain is huge, dude. I can't believe you made the thought there. Like, the idea to have this this like kind of sorceress character and this big like draped like cleric robe, but just have it kind of like over a bodysuit with these big gloves, almost like Vegeta has. Great look. I love that. And then to have the idea that the game design idea is that the you can take a hit by giving yourself a useless character in your party. And it's like called the Goof Off in English, but it has a different name in Japanese. And then if you keep them for 15 levels, they turn into the Sage, who is the best magic user who can heal and do damage everything else. And the Sage is very, very dignified, but the Goof Off is an insane-looking clown for the male and, like, a girl in a bunny suit for the female. And it's, like divergent sexual dimorphism and stuff like that. Very, very funny and cute. And I have like always loved Toriyama's designs. Like, I don't remember when I would have first seen this stuff, but I loved comics and I could not get enough of fucking comics. I was going everywhere for comics. I talked a couple weeks ago about fucking Tintin, and I'm just like digging through for everything. And I remember a friend of mine in elementary school coming in with Dragon Ball from the library.
Wow.
And I was like, no way. Not like the school library, but like the Groton Public Library. And I was like, no way, that's so cool. And he's like, yeah, we got it from the library. So the next time we went to the library, I picked up a couple volumes of Dragon Ball. And they were so good. I like tore through those things. And eventually I had to get them for myself. And like I would ask for them for Christmas and stuff like that. And I would get more volumes of Dragon Ball. Eventually I had up through the end of Red Ribbon. And I knew that Dragon Ball Z was a thing. But I could never catch it on TV on time, right?
Yeah.
So what happened was I ended up reading the whole series through checking it out at libraries stuff like that. And the other way I experienced Dragon Ball was through the video games, in particular Dragon Ball Budokai 1, which is a crappy fighting game, but great, interesting way to experience the story of Dragon Ball down to only the fights.
It follows the beats, right?
Yes, it does.
The story?
Yeah, it skips over some shit because they only had enough space on the disc for a certain amount of characters, right? Yeah. So you don't fight every Ginyu Force member. It's just Rakum and Ginyu. I don't remember certain anime moments. I remember reading them for the first time, and I remember the way they happened in the video game.
That's funny.
So they're like truncated in my head, but I love the sharp lines on all of these character designs. I love the like the choice to have these characters take up like all of the space of the panel, like when he's doing Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, but Z especially because the character designs got more complicated, so he's like spending even less time on drawing a background.
Probably just hates background.
Yeah, I don't blame him. Like, what? Like, you're trying to communicate a certain amount of information.
When your characters look this good, you can afford to not draw.
He's like, I'm drawing a really specific pose for Piccolo kicking somebody, and it's going to take up the whole fucking page.
Piccolo is so cool.
Yeah. One of my favorite Toriyama designs is after Frieza gets fucking owned in space, he comes back down to Earth. And you could think easily that this whole next arc is going to be about Frieza and his dad coming.
Yeah,
and you could be satisfied with that because, I mean, back in Dragon Ball, he did something similar with Piccolo. You know, Piccolo dies and then his son comes and his son is like another Piccolo. And there could be rich stuff to mine from there. But Frieza comes back and it's clear that he's not... all right. Like, he's a cyborg. All the parts of his that got fucked up are now replaced with robot parts, but they don't look good. They look scraped together. He's got, like, a patch and, like, a shoulder pad is sticking out of his head.
Yeah.
And, like, his tail is split into weird segments. He's got, like, these blocky-looking joints. There's a throwaway line he says where he's like, I'm even stronger than I was before, and I don't believe him when he says that because he does not
That's
look
a
good.
Bluff.
Yeah. But then he gets fucking cut in half by an insanely cool character, Trunks.
Yeah,
he
immediately gets cut in half.
Mm-hmm. And I love Frieza. Frieza's my favorite.
So
but I've never been sad about that. Frieza gets plenty of time in the sun, and the way he gets killed is so cool that it's like, how could you possibly complain? I couldn't. And only later on in life, only within the past couple of years of my life, have I been a Dragon Quest guy. And...
tell me about the slime.
The slime is ingenious, right? Yuji Horii is the one who's like...
I'm looking at
four
of them on the back of your computer.
Yes, I want the basic slime. I want the basic level one enemy of my RPG. Rather than having it be a skeleton or a rat, I would like it to be the slime. Which, you know, the living slime is something that's been around in D&D and other stuff for a long time.
Gelatinous cube.
So Toriyama sends back the design for the slime. It's like, oh, okay, you're a genius. Like, this is the best...
the most marketable thing on the planet.
The best mascot that could possibly exist. They've done hundreds of variations on slimes in different games and people
slime
drawing
draws
their own.
Near.
It's such a recognizable little face. And
he's
I
so
just want
happy.
To say that every drawing that he did for a Dragon Quest enemy is that good. Like, they are like all like...
he's got some good dragons.
Yeah. Oh, That's, yeah. Big fan
I
of
mean,
those.
Like, of course you got Shenron, but a lot of his, like, Dragon Quest enemy designs for, like, dragon-type enemies are cool. I've seen a lot of those.
I would like to shout out two in particular. One being the Killing Machine, which I posted a little bit earlier today. It's like a robot on four like, spindly legs with a sword and a crossbow that has arrows on its back.
Yeah.
And it's, like, not... you expect, like, kind of a robot to have lasers, but it's a very, like, analog interpretation of what this killing robot would have. And also the golem. And I love his golem design so much. This little pose where the golem is always like appearing to be marching forward. And it looks like there's somebody inside the golem. Because there's like a shadowed part around the eyes with the lights shining through. And I have always loved Toriyama's art. It influenced me for sure to draw my own stuff when I was a kid. And I think that... every time I discover something new of his that I didn't do before, like when I was a teenager, like a late teenager, I finally got around to Chrono Trigger playing the DS remake.
Yeah, I want a Type 5 on Chrono Trigger real quick, just because Robo and Frog are two of my favorite designs he's ever done.
Robo is such an incredible design. I've always loved his machinery.
Yeah.
Like, Robo is such an incredible... it looks like a fridge on tank treads.
Yeah.
And he's
incredibly
got,
cool.
And Frog is the, you know, a great interpretation of like, okay, the Frog Prince. Just merge those two fairy tale concepts together.
Yeah.
But he's more like a frog. He's less cartoony. He's got like the...
He's like a regular, pretty normal frog, but it's a good take.
He's got the split irises and he's got the little whiskers on his his snout. And
all the party members in that game are like iconic. Truly.
Huge fan
and
of
I'm like,
Ayla, the cave woman.
Yeah,
I love her gigantic hair. Her gigantic '80s hair is super good.
And I think like Lavos is super cool. Like weird, threatening bug creature. And they do like 30 forms of him in the end of the game.
Also, he can, like, it, when necessary, he can go intimidating. I'm going to pull up a design. The like, secret final boss of Dragon Quest XI is so good. Like, something I didn't even know he was, like, capable of doing. Who I'm not going to name in case someone plays that game. But wow,
big.
Yeah. But,
yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Chrono Trigger, because I had forgotten about that.
He also did Toeball No. 1, which I know you guys didn't play, but he did the designs for a fighting game, a 3D fighting game back in the 90s.
Cool.
And I love, like, the void eyes on this thing, and they shift around like in a big dome on the
Yoko
head.
Yoko Taro ass head.
Yeah. It's, and then once you start to break it down, it gets less intimidating. You start to see, like, real facial features there. It, like, grows this, like, little, this puggy creepy little mouth. And stuff like that. So, basically what I'm trying to say is there is just a, like, this fountain of creativity that has absolutely brought us joy in so many different ways. Yeah. And we're going to talk about it a little bit more in the second segment when we talk about Sandland.
Started it all. Earth's mightiest warriors, only smaller. Dragon Ball, weekdays at 5:30.
Master Roshi, get off the toilet.
I said hold on.
You're stinky.
They're so cute at that age. Only Toonami.
That's right.
All right, you want to dig in?
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to Please Don't Listen to This, Your Life Depends On It, the show where we do something different every single week. And this week, we are talking Sandland. So, in the 2000s, Dragon Ball was over. Dragon Ball was on a break. They're still making video games. They're still making movies. They're still making lots and lots and
Dragon
lots
Ball
of money
will never
off
be
of Americans.
Over, really.
But Toriyama wanted to do something new, something smaller. And you don't ever say no to him if he says he wants to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Because that man is like making so much money for everyone at this point. And also because, like, how could you possibly say no to a little Toriyama design? They're also excellent. Yeah.
If this guy's drawing something new, you're like, yeah.
Yes, exactly. I do want to see
as much as you can do.
I do want to see the little bird you drew. I do want to see the demon you drew. I do want to see the robot you drew. Please send me every single little scrap of paper that you worked on. This was always intended to be a short story. Plotted out from beginning to end, which is something he almost never does.
Yeah.
A non-specific post-apocalypse world where demons roam the land, but they're actually not that bad. They're very mild demons.
Yeah, they're normal. They like to hang out.
They go to bed without brushing their teeth, and that's like the most evil thing they do in this story. And you've got a Mad Max kind of tribal society with currency though, and a king oppressing his.
They have to pay money for water.
Yep, a king oppressing his subjects, getting making them pay extortionate prices for the very limited water in this kingdom, and because you're dealing with a mostly desert, and this is a, you know, it's not the it definitely takes its inspiration from Mad Max.
Land.
You've got you got everyone riding their little Toriyama golf cart vehicles around, and we are We are here with Beelzebub, who's kind of our point of view character, who is the prince of demons. And his dad, the king of demons, is just like sitting around reading manga, which is great.
Yeah.
Very like non-evil demons.
I got big, like whenever they do the fucking like underworld or afterlife in Dragon Ball, like the fucking guy who's in charge.
Enma.
Yeah. Yes. He's just like doing taxes. Like that definitely, that reminded me of this, I think. It's just like, oh man, if you were actually like an all-powerful demon lord, it would be boring. It would be work for you. But they channeled some of that energy into this, I think. He's just like a regular good dad in this.
Yeah, he's also enormous, but that's like the only weird thing about him.
Yeah.
He's fucking huge. He's like just Astaroth, like this absolute...
That's
like
why it made me think of Dragon Ball, because he's like, the king of the underworld is like 40 feet tall, but he's just sitting at a desk.
So they end up meeting with an old man named Rao who comes to them with a pitch. He's like, look, I'm an old man. I need help. We are going to find, and I can tell by the way the birds are migrating that there is a water source somewhere that is being kept hidden from us. And I want to find it so that my people can get water in a way that makes more sense for us, you know?
So they don't have to pay for water.
Yeah, so they don't have to pay for water from the king.
They go on a road trip.
They do. And it starts out with them in their little tiny golf cart with like a luggage train behind it. And then eventually they get a little tank, which is their main vehicle for the rest of the story. Brief thing, 4 chapters. They deal with the king's army. They deal with a group of bandits called the Swimmers, who are wonderful little characters.
Ironic. They can't go swimming. There's no water.
Yep.
We learn a little bit more about Rao, Thief, and Beelzebub along the way, their backstories, as well as the king's current army and what they're up to, what their goals are, why they do what they do. It's a fun, cute story, and I like it a lot. And I want to know what you guys thought of it.
Wow, big.
Mm-hmm. Right. Alex, what did you think of Sandland?
This is pretty good. I definitely touched on it earlier, but I, knowing that this is a like much newer thing from him is interesting, because I didn't think that my like mental image or what I had always heard of like later period Toriyama stuff was that he was just like he was in the Dragon Ball Z mines and like didn't get to do anything cool with that.
No, he did like one character design every 2 years for Dragon Ball stuff. It's like, can you make we need a demon for the movie, or we need we're doing a video game that's going to have an original character. Can you draw a girl member of the Ginyu Force? And he did. And he named.
Can
her
we get a new android that's also a Majin that's hot for our game?
Great design, excellent fucking design.
But yeah, so I was like happy to hear that this was like relatively new. Like I said in the first segment, a lot of my experience with his stuff is, or like my favorite stuff that he did was all like old as shit, like from the 80s. But to see him do like a relatively like early 2000s, pretty new, weird one-off thing was cool. I had never heard of this before Nick had pitched it. Definitely like, something that's up my alley. We joked about it at the top of the show, but it is the year of the desert. Just coming hot off of Dune, I was like absolutely down for this kind of a thing.
And this is, you know, it's not like super talked about now, but in 3 weeks, it's going to be everyone's favorite thing.
Yeah, we're ahead of the curve.
When the animation comes out. And if that game is good, maybe we'll revisit it.
Yeah. The like tiny little ensemble we have is really good. I think that like, Toriyama is great with road trip vibes. I mean, like that's a lot of the early going of Dragon Ball also is like, there's like 4 or 5 of us and we're going to weird different places and looking for stuff. And you get some of that in here. I'm a big fan of Beelzebub, funny little guy.
Oh, yeah. Excellent lead character.
I got some Trunks energy. He feels like a mini Vegeta a little bit. Maybe a little less arrogant, but he has some of that in there. Because he's like never fought anyone stronger than him. And then when we get to the end, you know, he actually has to fight for real, which is cool.
Insect Man.
Yeah. I love that they have almost a Dragon Ball type fight at the end of this. Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, we'll do one.
They even do the thing where it's like, we need to make sure we get far enough away so he can use his true power. I was like laughing at that. I'm like, wow, this is just like fucking Dragon Ball where they're like, let's go somewhere no one is to fight. But the quest for water is good. I like the like idea of it. It is interesting that it's like, oh, we heard about the secret lake and we're going to go try and find it. And then like, as the story unfolds, you get some of the backstory for your main characters. You understand why the old man has like wants to do this. And then you uncover some of the like some of the lies that the king was telling everyone about some events that transpired previous to this.
Well, a lot of it is this General Zue or Zhu.
Zhou, I think.
Yep.
And he's the one who kind of, well, he was commanding, Rao's, right.
Yeah, they did like a war thing. Crime.
Yeah, they like blew up some people who were trying to make water and said that they were actually trying to make WMDs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Which, hey, in the mid-2000s, that was kind of on everyone's mind.
Pretty, yep. That's true. I like that stuff. The military general guy who ends up turning good is an interesting character that like a lot of the army stuff reminded me of like the Red Ribbon Army stuff in Dragon Ball. It's very similar. Like the way that he does troops is funny. And like, cause they're like not that serious and kind of bumbling.
Yeah. I was going to use that same word. Yeah.
They're like, it's not like they're not threatening, but they also are like it's a good, villain to like literally kick him in the butt. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, General Are, and like when you know you see him, he's like the only person who has like a nice haircut.
Yeah,
in like the whole story.
Oh, he's got like the big curl. Yeah, like, pomp. Thing.
Everyone else is all disheveled, and then the commander is like a fucking brain and a robot body. Or he's, I guess it's more accurate to say he's a head sticking out of an orb.
Yeah. I love that. That's like a great
design. His design is so good. He's got like a breathing tube up his nose. Mm-hmm. And then there was one panel where it shows him as he is now. And in the back, there's like an old portrait of him with a different hat on. And he's still that fucking old.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, our other like kind of main character, the old man, the sheriff, Rao. Mm-hmm. He's super interesting. I like that they contrast like Beelzebub as this young kid with two other old dudes. Mm-hmm. It's a good like motley crew, I think. And I like that he's got his little sheriff badge and uniform. His silly little hat.
Yep.
I don't know. I had fun with this. It goes pretty fast. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a short manga, and like it's pretty fast paced, which is good. I prefer that. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not I'm not as much of a manga guy as my other co-hosts, but it is very snappy and it reads really well. And even just like I'm scrolling it again, scrolling through the first chapter here on my laptop, just like looking at all the cool, the cool panels and stuff.
When you see Beelzebub's dad, Lord Lucifer, he's just this, like we were saying earlier, this towering figure.
I'm literally on that page right now. He's reading a tiny Faust, which is a great detail I didn't catch on the first go. But he's reading like pocket Bible size Faust. Mm-hmm. But he's huge.
And he says, if you come back alive, you're only allowed to play video games for 1 hour. Because the way they convince Beelzebub to help him is by bringing the last video game system developed before the
fucking apocalypse. Hold on. It was a funny joke. I have to flip back through to it.
Oh, it was the PS6.
PlayStation 6, and it was Dragon Quest 13, I believe, which did come out.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, we haven't hit... So at the time, they were on Dragon Quest 8, I want to say. So they're like, well, think about in the far off future when we have, this will be a funny joke, but we are not at a PS6 yet, and we are not at Dragon Quest 13 yet. 12 hasn't come out.
Oh, all right. Quest 12 I thought they had already made 13, but I'm thinking
No, Dragon Quest 12.
I'm thinking Final Fantasy.
So. It's announced, but it's not, we don't know anything about it. They've been working on it for years. So those are probably going to be the last Toriyama designs we see.
Yeah. It'll be really funny, though, because they're already talking about the PS6.
Yeah.
So Dragon Quest XIII might actually land on the
PS6. Yeah, it might just match up exactly right. Yeah.
All right, so a couple more, two or three more minor things. I knew that this manga was about them driving around in a tank, but in the first chapter, they drive a car that immediately gets owned, and I thought that that was really funny.
They drive over spike strips.
Yeah.
So funny.
They immediately get jacked. Mm-hmm. And then the runner that Thief always likes to drive is really good. Like, it's just funny to see this weird old man with a curly Q on his head driving a car or a tank.
And then they're like, oh, how are we going to get supplies? And Thief's like, I'll steal them. And it's like, all right, let me put my stealing outfit on. And he comes back and he's dressed like Santa.
Yeah, he's like, I can convince them to give me anything like this. But there was the funny thing, like, he's got like no hair except for the one little curly Q. So he puts on the hat and he's like, this is going to mess up my hairdo. And then he uses hairspray later to fix it. And then that becomes like, not a MacGuffin, but like a little Deus Ex Machina type of
thing.
Yeah,
like, it's like a plot device. It's how they steal the tank. Yeah, it's a funny funny joke. There's a lot of good, if you just read a plot synopsis of this, it would seem a lot more serious than it actually reads on the page.
And
I
you wouldn't get much out of it if you just read a plot synopsis.
Oh, I just mean that it's like, it's not, the story of this could be a more grim post-apocalypse tale.
Yes.
It could be Mad Max.
Yeah.
It could absolutely be.
The stakes are pretty similar.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the like lightheartedness and weirdness that Toriyama lends to this that I think really elevates it.
I think that every chapter has at least one joke I really like.
Yeah.
And the one from the first chapter that I wanted to shout out while we're talking about that first chapter is when the little like raccoon demon gets up after being hit with holy water. And he's like, holy water doesn't work on Japanese demons.
Yeah, I was hoping that guy would show up, but he left most of his other friends behind.
Yeah, the Village of the Demons has a bunch of weird, funny designs.
Yeah, and they're worried about the fishmen and the kappa not being able to swim.
Yeah.
And then fucking later on, when Beelzebub is leaving, they say, watch out for holy water. So it definitely does work on them. or it works on him anyway. But it's a funny thing to say. And speaking of Dragon Quest, as we were a little bit ago, they're like, oh, the slime stayed out in the sun too long. It's just like the slime face from Dragon Quest is just on the ground. He's melted.
Yeah. Oh, and he's got like, I think there's like a book next to him. Yeah, like he
was
like,
just hanging out.
Yeah, he was just hanging out reading and he just melted.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
He's dead.
Like a decent amount of fun action in this. There's like every chapter or two, there's a good little brawl that they get into. Whether it be like a big monster or a bunch of thugs or some soldiers. It's pretty good stuff. Like you can tell that he has a type of story, a type of tone, and content that he really likes to do. Because it's always like a weird crew of guys, all with fun designs. We got a couple fights in there. We get a couple jokes in there.
We're on a journey.
It felt very comfortable in a way that like was definitely welcome.
Seb. Yeah. What did you think about Akira Toriyama's Sandland?
I thought it was good fun. It was really cute. I read this on a site called mangaforlife.com.
Oh, all right. I forgot to shout this out. I use comic.io.
Okay.
The first one, one of the first results I clicked on to read this, I don't remember the website name, but I was about halfway through chapter one scrolling on my phone, and I immediately had a hentai ad in between those. I just saw a fucking anime woman's vagina, and I'm like, okay, different website. Right, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I had some ads like on the top and bottom, but they were always for some like the same visual novel or game, and I forgot what it was called, and it was like they were doing like Ahoge faces or something that. But like it was pretty tame.
Yeah, I was astounded to see, like, this was actually an explicit image, and I was like, whoa. Like, I must have...
Those are bolder than they used to be, I've noticed lately.
I guess the first result, I don't know, maybe it could have been an adult site that just happened to have regular manga, I don't know, but I was like, whoa, what?
Yeah, like, they gotta be aggressive to hook you, I guess, now with the ads. But so the first site I clicked on for this, they had a fan translation that I think must have gotten put up before it was published by Shonen Jump.
I'm sure this had plenty of hype behind it. I'm sure people were scan translating this.
A scanlation by somebody from a forum who had some kind of name like Shit Eater.
No, we love Shit Eater.
But it was like really stilted, like never used any contractions type of thing. So I switched over to the actual official Shonen Jump release, which is much better. I had a good time. Beelzebub has the cutest little demon design. I love him so much, and he is so good and cute.
His little goggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's got like a towel around his neck as a cape.
He takes that off when he's like getting serious.
Half ascot, half cape. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, he's so adorable, and he uses his tail to fight and everything, and he can just do whatever the fuck he wants. Like, you just discover he has more powers over the course of the whole manga. Like, he can jump, like, insanely far. He's very fast. He can really, like, just destroy shit. He has super strength. He has telepathy. Apparently, all demons can do that. Apparently, he doesn't know summoning magic. So the other demons were making fun of him for it before they left. He's got the cutest little design. I love him so much. Mm-hmm. And I love how the demons, like, they are literally just good guys. All of them.
There's a line in chapter 2 where Beelzebub said, "No one gets to be more evil than a demon." That made me laugh. Just reading it, knowing that he's such a fucking softy. the evilest thing he can think of is like taking someone's strawberry off their cake or something. He's such a, like, and you know, this goes into, if they wanted to be more heavy-handed, they do a thing later on where they're like, you know, we are demons, but the things that humans do seem a lot more evil.
Yeah, he's like, we don't kill people.
Yeah.
Humans are the real monsters.
Yeah.
And if they were trying to, if this were a different kind of story, then they could really dig into that. But instead, they are willing to let it sit and move on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you have an idea of what types of characters these demons are. And it's very funny just to watch them interact with like these human criminals and monsters and things like that.
It's really cute how nice he actually is. He finds the Peachy people, like a remnant of the Peachy people living at the Phantom Lake that they've been looking for, and Rao comes through and they're both kind of like, let's leave them alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not tell anybody about this hidden oasis.
Yeah, I blew them up. And I didn't mean to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he meant to blow them up, but he wasn't told that they were actually good guys.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun with this. This is definitely an Akira Toriyama, like, distilled.
Yeah, into I think it was the it
14
was
chapters.
The perfect choice to like do something to like remember him, because this is like
so filled with fun designs.
Yeah, it's condensed. It's crystallized into everything that, like, we all like of his stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And there's one thing I noticed while I was reading this, and it's when you have a good character design, you can clearly hear a voice in your head.
Yeah,
definitely.
Like, when I did the voice for Beelzebub earlier, that's, like I immediately knew what he sounded
like. And
that's
how Seb got hired on to do the dub.
Yeah, I've been hired by Funimation is gone. Crunchyroll.
Sony Crunchyroll.
Yep. The king, you just kind of hear him as like, whoa, that kind of like, my water, or something like that. Like, you can hear all of them in your head. You know exactly what these characters sound like because their character designs are so distinct.
Yeah.
I think that's just it's a hallmark of good character design. It's like one of my teachers in college said about environments or backgrounds is, if you nail that, then you can smell it. Like, you can smell like the woods, or if you're in a tavern and like a smoky pub or something like that, if you really nail that environment, you can absolutely smell it when you're looking at it. And he does that.
Even though there's no color, I feel like you can definitely feel the heat of a lot of these scenes.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think Alex said most of what I wanted to say, really. Like, It's just a bunch of dudes going on a journey, and it's mm-hmm. really lighthearted yep. and fun.
Road trip vibes. Do you have a favorite moment, stuff that stands out to you?
We've talked about it.
Like any other designs besides Beelzebub?
I have one more that I was scrolling through that I forgot about. When they're fighting with the flying water carrier thing, Beelzebub and Thief tilt the entire tank upwards shoot at it.
The guys controlling that plane are like, well, they can't shoot directly up.
Yeah, thank goodness that cannon doesn't aim upward.
Yeah, and then they do it.
Yeah, and then they tilt the whole tank upwards to shoot it down.
That's really good.
That was what I was going to bring up as my favorite moment in this series is that clever.
Go ahead, jump into it, Nick. We'll chime in if we have anything else.
It's been a long time since I read this. I checked. I was looking through the release history, and it did get a release, an English release, pretty close to when it came out in 2003. But they didn't make a digital version. They didn't have an official digital version until 2013.
Yeah, so, manga is pretty slow at getting.
It took a long time to digitize a lot of this stuff.
Yeah,
I remember.
A lot longer than it through official channels.
There were crappy scans of Hunter Hunter and JoJo for a long time.
Yeah, there were
those
couple
doangs.
Yeah, while I was looking for a Shonen Jump release of this, there were a couple that were just somebody took apart a volume of the manga and scanned it, and the pages were yellow and. Mm-hmm.
If you are a big manga head and you like shonen stuff, or even if you don't like shonen stuff, the Viz app is really, really good. Wow. And super cheap, too. It's $2 a month.
Viz Media.
Yeah.
They have an app?
Yeah, they have an app. It makes it really easy to read stuff on your phone.
No
I've been
ads?
Subscribed for no ads.
Is it infinite scrolling? Do you have to go to next page? How do they do it?
You just swipe and it's the next page.
Okay, that's okay.
I
kind of liked how this... I'm sorry to jump in here.
Yeah, no, this is important.
One of my big, I do like, I'm a little manga skeptic, but one of my biggest issues is reading it on the computer. I really don't like reading a comic. I would rather have it in my hands. And most of the times when Nick has suggested a comic, it's one that he already owns. So we have one.
A physical version.
We have one kicking around.
I don't have a physical Sandland, but it
was short enough where it wasn't a big deal.
I think I'm due for that, though. I wonder if the prices are going to get all jacked up now. But
this website that I had it was all vertically oriented, so it was just one long web page that scrolled through the whole volume. Mm-hmm. Which for something like this, that's breezy and not super text heavy, and it's all in looking at the amazing art, it worked really well, I think.
Yeah,
but anyway, go ahead.
But I didn't it didn't stick in my head like some of Toriyama's other stuff did, even though I enjoyed it. So coming back to it for this and reading it on the Viz app, I really enjoyed. I had a great time with it. And I was struck by the little clever scenarios. He still manages to have these exciting action sequences while not going for the sort of thing that Dragon Ball or Z were doing. As Alex pointed out, he does have one at the end there that is a more traditional shonen style fight between Beelzebub and the Insect Man.
He earned it. It's worth it. It's good.
But in the very first issue, you have the conflict with the bandits.
Yeah, they all have clown makeup on.
Oh no, wait, that's issue two. Because in issue one, the first thing the very first problem after they get going is. The giant sand dragon.
Yep.
And which has another amazing Toriyama design.
They drop all their supplies to get away from it, which is a funny joke.
Mm-hmm. And which they agonize over what they can bring and what they can't bring and how much water and food they're going to need. And then they have to ditch it immediately when there's a sand dragon. And then the second chapter, you have the bandits that are all in clown makeup. And, as you start running into more enemies when there's the tank and everything, they have to trick them a lot of the time. It's we have to make them think that we are coming from the other direction, that this tank we stole, that we're just the people who were originally piloting it. Or later on when they're up against multiple tanks at once, they're like, if we get up here, the sun is going to be in their eyes. They're not going to be able to shoot us. And
that was brilliant.
Yeah, I really
loved
this
bothering to construct an interesting action scene and plot it out in a way where we immediately understand the spatial relations between these characters, and it's still interesting and funny. Like, it's when the soldiers are going, "Oh, I can't see, I'm looking at the sun," that you're like,
yeah, it's both a good joke, an interesting plot beat, and like a cool moment.
Yeah, you get everything.
That's good fight choreography, is you're not just having two guys go at it, mm-hmm. like, and ignoring everything around them. They're actually using the environment around them.
Mm-hmm. And I was also a huge fan of how at the end, this is not much of a spoiler, but they do, in fact, bring water back to the land. They, open up a giant dam that the king is keeping.
Yeah, once you see the dam, you're like, oh, they're going to shoot it with the tank.
And the way they do it is so satisfying. They hit it with the tank all these times, and it's like, oh, it's still not enough. It's almost broken. And it's like,
we only have one more shot left, and then they blow it up.
Who was the last shot? Who did that come from? And it's the swimmers, the goofballs from earlier, who are a gang based around swimming that have never actually seen enough water
except
to swim
for the
in.
Dad.
He's got like a huge like rail gun. That guy has a good design.
At the end, you see them all in like floaties in the river.
Yeah. They've always wanted to swim.
Mm-hmm. That shot when they go up over the dam and just see there's an ocean.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was really, really good. Like you can just imagine like the awe coming off of them. Like I've never
great
seen
contrast.
Much fucking water.
And then the hidden oasis with the peachy people.
Yeah.
As well. It's also
capybaras.
Uh-huh. I think that was an end of chapter stinger. Beelzebub coming over the hill and seeing that whole like tropical oasis was really cool.
And for them to be like, okay, this solves the problem that we have, but we're clearly not done yet. And also we don't want to disturb them.
Yeah.
They live in peace away from us. Let's leave them alone. That's a really sweet like message and moment to have there, to be like, oh, hey, this species was not completely wiped out, but we can prevent further harm from coming to them by simply not bothering them.
Yeah.
they are doing just fine without us. There are so many little moments and actions and jokes that make this fun and special, and I'm excited to see how it's expanded upon in the web animation and game. I was not clamoring for more of this world.
I know. I'm curious.
It's so satisfying in the package that it has.
I'm curious how they're going to expand on it.
They definitely drew new... Toriyama definitely drew new characters to be added, judging by the trailers. So I'm looking forward to seeing
who they are and what he's got going on. You could do another story of this scale in this world and make it feel pretty natural.
I mean, you see right at the end, they already are going on another adventure. They're like, hey, look.
Yeah, we solved the water problem, but there's something else that needs to happen.
There's still plenty of, we're still living in the post-apocalypse with demons and bandits and everything
there's
else
still
going
monsters
on.
Or whatever. Yeah.
And this story really just makes me feel that like sense of wonder and excitement at creation, because the pressure is low here. It's like, what if I wanted to do a short adventure? What if I wanted to do something small and great and like showcase a couple of fun ideas without having to worry about a super large scale story.
This entire comic is like 200 pages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they don't there are not a lot of words in those 200 pages.
Yeah.
They use it very sparingly. Which is not to say that it's all landscapes or something, but it's just, they say what they need to, and it's very, it works. And I'm happy that both of you were able to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really happy to revisit this for an episode. It's something that really just feels special and feels like appropriate for the moment. Alex, we've got a departure for next week.
Yes, we do. This is something that I've been into lately that I'm going to introduce. It's a bit of a different episode for our format, but we're going to try our best with it. We will be going to the big box store Costco and buying things.
Get $1.50.
I think
we're all going together.
I think we're going to make it a group trip. We're going to see how that goes. I think there may be chicken bake in our future. I have not tried that, and I think we might have to try it on the show.
Ooh,
we're going to see. I'm going to see if I can make that happen. But This is going to be a weird one, so bear with us next week where we'll be wholesaling.
All right. Wholesaling coming up next week. Thank you so much for listening. R.I.P. Akira Toriyama, and we'll see you next time.
Sand land.
Bye.